Hello, my PMs. Long time no speak. Shout out to those of you who've let me know you were regular downloading listeners and were wondering, so where's the next episode? So thanks for your attention. I do these episodes as a labor of love. And frankly, even more than just running out of time, I began to run out of guests and topics. None of you ever sent me anything. Send me some topics, my people. That's why I appreciated getting to interview the UMD Symposium speakers over the spring this year and take them a bit out of their presentation comfort zone. Have guests, we'll record. If you have other symposia you'd like me to have their presenters get interviewed, let me know. And that brings us to today with Galen Lowe of the Digital Project Management Company and former two-time PM Point of View guest who reached out to me with some of the topics that are, well, as I interpreted it, topics that are getting his goat, being a burr in his saddle. So with co-host Mike Hannon, once again back with us, we are here to hear, explicate, ponder, and pontificate. And perhaps even elucidate and educate each other and you. Let me know how that works on LinkedIn. So on with the show.
This is PM Point of View, the podcast that looks at project management from all the angles. Here's your host, Kendall Lott.
Galen, how you doing? And welcome back.
Thanks for having me on the show again. Two-time, going for a third, I must be doing something okay-ish.
Yeah. We're going to hit this one out of the park this time. Where are you calling from, Galen?
Oh, yeah. I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It is sunny and was stuffy. We had some hurricane fallout, but we survived.
And Mike, how are you doing, man?
Doing great in lovely, hot, dry Utah.
Oh, nice for you.
Up to do some off-roading in the next week. It'll be super fun.
Nice. Well, I'm up in Vermont, which has finally cooled off starting 2 days ago to the point of being
cold. By the way, Galen, you know, Saturday Night Live gives guest hosts some special jacket when they've done it five times.
Uh-huh. Got to start bringing out the merch.
There, I was going to say swag. I haven't done merch and swag. Well, I don't even have any listeners. How am I going to get them to buy anything? Maybe if I sold something, they'd show up.
Yeah, swag. Yeah, there you go.
First time caller, you get a swag. There we go. So there we are with some questions that are driving us nuts. So since we last talked, literally a few weeks afterwards, AI happened, as it were, large language models. And it's been about 3 years since we talked, I believe, or since we had you on a show here. So we had some interesting coverage before, but you hit me with a key question there, which is, where do project managers fit in a world where most projects are led by non-PMs? So we're going to call this one PMs encroached. We feel assaulted from everywhere. So Galen, open the doors to this. Let's get this burr out of your saddle, man. What's hurting?
Well, listen, I'll open with this. There is a sort of trigger moment that's been happening with the folks that I talked to in project management and beyond. Of course, that's AI, right? AI has been just progressing really quickly into our daily lives, and it's triggering those existential questions of like, will I still be found valuable? What do I do in a world of AI? All these moments of question and deliberation. And when you peel back the onion, very few of these conversations are underpinned by AI, actually. And a lot of it circles back around to conversations that you and I had years ago about what does a PM do? How can PMs understand their own value? How can we support projects that are being led by folks who haven't been trained in project management? And how can AI support some of what's changing? So it's kind of like this footnote, even though it's a subject line, it actually ends up being a footnote in the conversation. And I was like, that needs to be talked about because everywhere I go, every conference I go to, every speaking opportunity I go to, every podcast I listen to, every conversation I'm having is all about AI. And I think we're kind of missing what the actual question is in the world of project management by talking about AI and how to use it and, you know, implications of it. Actually, I think it's spiraling down into a problem that's got nothing to do with AI in my world. So that's kind of the bee in my bonnet right now.
Yeah, the not uncommon problem of a new technology is actually, while it makes it all new and interesting, it's just covering the core questions. It doesn't actually resolve core questions. You still have to resolve core questions and find real value in whatever the new technology is. But actually, you know, you remind me of something you talked about, podcasts and conferences. Would you remind the listeners here what you do and what your firm does?
Perfect. Yeah. So I'm a digital project guy. I'm the co-founder of a knowledge sharing community called the Digital Project Manager, where we help project professionals get skilled, get connected, get confidence so that they can deliver complex digital projects better. And by digital projects, I mean mostly projects that involve people, pixels, and code. We're talking things like website, web application development. We're talking things like digital marketing campaigns, things that move fast and are complex and are on the bleeding edge of technology, which all make a recipe for really fun projects and a really challenging role. So I head up a community there. We compare notes. We help train each other. We support one another just to help us stay relevant, current, and vocal advocates for what we do.
Mike?
Love our conversations, Galen. You always shed more and more insights whenever we talk. But I'm very curious, why did you choose the word relevant there? Do you think that there's a risk of falling or sliding into irrelevance?
This is the viral eye of the twister, right? The eye of the storm for me is that it's always been about relevance. I don't think it's new. I just think it's been that constant existential question for project managers in my space, A, because of technology, B, because a lot of the folks that I deal with, they work in agencies, right? They're in a client services world. They are working for agencies that came up as ad agencies. They are working for agencies that are getting consumed by larger agencies, right? Acquired by some of the big groups. And there's a lot of these waves in the ocean that constantly force them to question whether or not they're relevant. And I would say, this is the other sort of piece of my thesis, which is that they are fundamentally misunderstood and always fighting for showing what their value is. Like, they have to constantly prove their value. That's the conversation I normally have. Usually it's like, my boss has no idea what I do. You know, I get paid under market. They're talking about delegating some of my project work to AIs or, you know, offshore or robots now, I guess. But I think it's always kind of underpinned it because of a general misunderstanding of what a project manager does in this context of digital agencies in a client services and consulting world.
And you know, Galen, if you take this back roughly 30 years with the advent of Scrum, if you're old like me, you might remember that Scrum predated the Agile Manifesto, as it would have to have done, right, by almost a decade. We don't need no stinking project managers. We can self-manage. And we still see organizations fighting that. Like, well, to say we don't need project managers may well be true, but to say we don't need project management is really dangerous, in my view. What do you think about that?
We've been getting into this a little bit in some deeper, vibrant conversations in our community. And I don't disagree on a certain scale. Where I see project managers being really, really important is when you reach a point of complexity, you know, scrum, or, you know, you're dealing with, scaled agile, or something is sort of a larger puzzle that you need to kind of keep an eye on all of the moving parts. And you might not have space anymore to also do another job, right? So if you're a team, you know, you're the development team, right? You know, if I'm sort of writing code or doing UI design, at least in my world, right? Like, then I might not have time to do everything I would need to do to keep a project on rail. So in that regard, I see trained project managers who are, you know, self-identify as project managers. I could see them being really useful for stitching all of these initiatives together. You know, people would say program management, portfolio management. And, you know, I think there's huge value in that. But I also have to agree with you in a sense. And, you know, like talking about encroachment, and not necessarily in a bad way, but we're talking about, yeah, projects are getting done by teams. And to your point, for 30 plus years, it's been the sort of, we can self-manage and we can deliver by collaborating. And I fundamentally believe in that. I do not think that someone has to be the project manager for whatever, planning that bachelor party or, you know, organizing dinner in 3 months or, you know, developing the next release of a known piece of software or, you know, doing exploration, you know, in whatever, like aerospace. I think there are a lot of great minds that can just intuitively work together and understand and, you know, give them a framework and they should be able to produce value. And then I think there's also another layer on top of that when you're like, okay, but what if I need all of those brains on the team, you know, almost full time doing the thing that they do, doing the thing that they see as their craft? You know, how much can I expect them to also be project managing, even if it's within their skill set? So I guess it's kind of a resource capacity thing for me.
I'd take it even one step further and say, you know, if you take Scrum as our continuing example here, well, the product owner is responsible for making the trade-offs between cost, schedule, and scope. And some strict Scrum guide adherents would even say, oh no, we keep at least one of those fixed. Pivot all day on scope, but we have this dedicated team that just keeps going and their cost is just a function of how long we have them working on it and iterating. And I've seen so many examples of product owners in that role. They've never been trained to make a trade-off decision like that. And they may well have great insights on the competition and, ooh, we just got new intel. The competition might beat us to market by a month. You know, we'd better accelerate. But how?
You're describing that they don't input in that decisions. Mike, I actually wanted to ask you about that when you mentioned the Scrum teams go back that far. because it may speak to what we're seeing currently with the ossification in the whole Scrum approach, which we've talked about before, right? People have like a set pattern now. That's the new religion, or not even more new anymore, but you know, that's what they own and what they want to act like. Back when you saw that before, was it a rejection at that time of project manager or of project management techniques? Because what I've run across was this idea that we don't need project managers, but I'm wondering how far Agile and Scrum has gotten to, we don't even need those techniques. Was it about the discipline or the title, which is kind of a thing we need to talk about still?
I think it's the question, because I don't think they ever really talked about the techniques. They just sort of threw the baby out with the bathwater without realizing. And I understand the reasons why, because I was switching to the software engineering field, you know, in those days. And it was actually kind of an exciting time that, you know, we don't need a bunch of bosses telling us what to do. We're actually competent professionals. We have some idea on what we're doing. We have our thumb on the pulse of the thing that actually is going to deliver value.
Right.
We don't have patience for the politics and the noise and the silliness and the dumb decisions and the things that slow us down and then we get blamed for it. So I view it as a rejection of project managers that were never in service to the objective.
But see, the decisions still have to be made and those inputs about the intel and all that still has to be made, right?
Techniques are still useful.
You can still, yeah, the functions still exist. To me, that's always the interesting thing with organizations as we argue about project versus product and all of these things and program is these, it's platonic. These things actually exist. They just may not be instanced in your environment, your detriment. Like decisions actually happen. I'm sorry, there's still scope, scale, and cost, right? I mean, it, like, and time, like things have to happen to be valuable in the market, hence the golden triangle that we talk about sometimes, right? You know, about instead of the iron triangle, the golden triangle. So that's real. That exists. You can choose to agree with it, acknowledge it, use tools to help you get with it, design around it or not, but it exists. I'll
even say that whether you do or do not achieve the desired business objectives of any initiative is a downstream effect of how well the team flowed work to completion in a way that actually mattered to somebody.
Who owns that? And now take us over there, Galen, because one of the things is a lot of the people and other disciplines are leaking into that. So who would end up owning driving that flow or monitoring that flow or understanding that flow or making decisions?
I wonder if, Mike, you want to take that one first?
Yeah, I guess you're saying time to pack it up, Kendall. No need for this podcast anymore. I think what we're really talking about here, and the way I interpret your question is, we've been taught that we're not very relevant, right? We've been taught that our value lies in the nitty-gritty critical path analysis results and, you know, drawing a bunch of boxes and arrows and taking meeting notes and nagging people when they're behind on their tasks, right? Like, that is a glorified administrator. And I think the problem is too many PMs believe that's what they are. And I think we've done a very big disservice to PMs. Example, like the first six PMBOK guides kind of reinforced that, right? It wasn't until the seventh that said the word PM is actually a system for value delivery and therefore is a serious discipline that we all need to up our game and get our, you know, get away from all the nitty-gritty details, which can sometimes be quite useful, the techniques and all that. But to like, what's our real purpose here? There's even exam questions on the PMP exam where you're forced to choose between, is my job as a PM really to manage the baseline or to drive value delivery for my organization? And the wrong answer was to drive value delivery. Like, you'd get dinged for that. Like, that was not the answer they wanted if you're going to pass the exam. And side note, full disclosure, I'm on the PMBOK 8th edition authorship team. And there's 11 colleagues working with me who are similarly motivated to kind of help, especially junior PMs. Like, let's get them early, right? This is a really important thing that you're embarking upon or exploring or checking into to see if it might be for you. And if we can train them to take the mindset, this is one of the most important things that drives our entire global economy, right? I mean, there's more and more trillions of dollars being invested in projects. Note the word invested, which means there's risk. We're not guaranteed that we're going to get the bang for the buck we want, but sometimes we'll get extraordinary returns, and therefore it's still worth investing more and more money in it. Well, if that's not a clue that being a key player in that engine might be a really important, valuable thing for you in your career, well, then shame on us for not having really made that clear in the past.
So it may not be about being called the PM then again. I'm thinking of a subordinate question that Galen had. You called it driving value there and value delivery. Galen, you referred to it as business savvy PM. It seems to be about the business savviness to cause value, whether or not we call them PMs or not.
I take umbrage with the term business savvy PMs because it's like saying the obvious, right? Like,
or it should be the obvious. Well, maybe that's the problem. Well, is that the problem? It was obvious.
Business unsavvy PM.
Actually, you know, I think that's a really good point to hit on. We do, but we don't think we do because of what, you know, how you define business savviness. And I agree. It's like not the best term because you can interpret it any which way. Fundamentally, all the triangles we talk about is business, right? We're talking about financial constraints. We're talking about resource constraints. We're talking about risk. It's all business stuff. But the note I have here actually is like, we can probably afford, project managers in general, we can afford to switch our lens from being project managers who understand the business to business strategists who understand project delivery and value delivery. And I think that's the flip because I think, you know, I went through my career going like, I understand business. And luckily I did have some like business development background. You know, I did the account management thing. I was sort of like in an agency leadership role. I saw how all the like, you know, the cogs turned. But without that, I was just like, yeah, I understand business. I need to deliver this project on time, on budget, and I can't have any scope creep. I'm a business person because that's how businesses work. And I'm like, wait a minute. I don't know if I understood what the overall strategy of my business was. What am I trying to do? I am a cog that operates through, you know, business mechanics, but I am not looking at the business in terms of like what we're trying to achieve, the bigger picture. I wasn't even looking at the bigger picture of what my clients are trying to achieve. I was just like, you have this one initiative to do a thing and I'm going to give it to you. And that was value for me. But I realized as time went on, that wasn't really the value. It was, but the real value was me understanding the bigger picture. It was the big needle we're trying to move, not the small needle. And I think that's the lens that really starts adding value. And then Kendall, back to your question, like, I'm like, you know, in a world where, I'm going to try and tie it all back, in a world where the world has kind of spent, you know, 3 decades pushing back against project managers, who maybe were the naggy administrative project managers for the most part, that may have been actually the case. Now we've kind of responded, I think, as project managers to kind of be like, yeah, okay, we were kind of crappy sometimes, let's try and be better. So we spent the past 3 decades trying to be better at how we deliver value, how we create high performance, how we support our teams and like empower sort of the delivery of value. We still don't see ourselves as fully relevant and the world's still kind of pushing us out in a way. And then Kendall, back to your question about, well, who is responsible then for value delivery? I interpreted it as in a world without PMs. And I was like, well, okay, it can only go 2 ways really. Either you have the executive leadership layer of an organization that is project savvy, right? And to your point about project management versus project managers, and they have to be savvy enough about how those techniques get applied, what those risks are, and how all of the delivery mechanics lead to value. And or you need project teams who are collaborative and flat in hierarchy with no project manager who really understand what the strategy is. And then it comes back to old problems, right? Which is that it's really hard to explain the high level strategy and vision that the executive team is sort of wrangling with and coming up with and distill it down to the other layers of the organization so that they get it. You know, the organizations who are nailing that, they're like automatically have an advantage in my opinion, because it's not easy to do.
I think your comment about it flipping at that at the top of your statement there was interesting to me when I was reflecting in part of our pre-conversation on business schools. If we flip it around, then that means instead of trying to find PMs that we're constantly exhorting to like learn the business because we sit in a PMI meeting with all PMs in there, it might be that the people who are training in business need to be trained in this discipline, not occasionally, not perhaps, not perchance, but by explicit, you know, need and statement. Because I know when I look at MBAs, everyone's like, oh, did you study business before you became a CEO? It's like, why would I have ever studied business to be a CEO? Because at the size of, well, at a consulting side, why do I need to go take the 4 tracks? Here's how you do accounting, here's finance, here's marketing, and then here's this vague thing called leadership and strategy. Mm. I mean, I can take courses in that, or I can outsource that and hire people who do most of that. But I have to do strategic thinking, but I have to get things done. Something actually, I mean, I think Elon Musk said this once. His comment was, well, somebody actually has to make something somewhere, right? Like eventually somebody actually has to do something. So whether you like him or not, but my point is at some point as a CEO, I don't get an invoice out the door until someone actually does something.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it admiring the problem. So, you know, when instead of actually doing it, our clients do that sometimes too, of course. But to this point, I'm wondering if it really is more about an integration that this discipline is meaningful and relevant. And it doesn't matter how it gets executed so much, but that you cannot be good in business unless you have these disciplines, as opposed to taking the formalized role and saying you can't be good unless you learn this other stuff. I don't know. It's an argument for breaking away from project managers. And then right before I let you go, Mike, I will say then to your earlier comment, I guess we need to wrap up these podcasts and be done. Actually, no, I might have been prescient. Project management point of view. The problem is my audience shouldn't be project managers. It should be all the business people who need to start hearing about a project management point of view, not a project manager point of view.
Yeah, maybe we should call it a better lens.
A better lens. We need to sell it to the different audience, because this is the problem. I think the disciplines matter at some point. I don't know. But anyway, we may also be on the wrong disciplines, because you want to talk about the value side even more.
Yeah. And, you know, if you think back to the business savvy PM, like, you know, wet water, right? Like, I'm aware that there are PMs who are not, just like there are accountants who are not, and marketing experts who are not, and on, right? And there's, of course, the natural career progression that we all would like a chance. You know, we're not all going to be instant CEOs when we start our careers. We need to understand the trees sometimes before the forest. And so all that's normal, natural, fine. What I think is unnatural and abnormal and not fine is this notion that these things are divisible, right? That they don't come integrated. Like this notion that somehow the PM techniques are divorced from the purpose, right? So like, if you look at the essence of the thing, whatever the thing is we're talking about, like what's the essence of accounting? Well, it's to help businesses understand whether their decisions are working and helping the organization thrive or not. They might not teach that in accounting class, but that's the essence of it, right? What's the essence of project management? To create a better world. In fact, even PMI now, just I think 6 months ago maybe, they changed their tagline. And it's something like, our purpose is to help elevate the world. I'll go look up the exact, you know, mission statement.
Well, but hold on, I gotta challenge that real quick. I'm not sure if that's very helpful, because who isn't doing that? How does that make me around this discipline and bringing any kind of rigor to anything as opposed to any other job?
Well, I think it lends an extraordinarily valuable amount of clear thinking when you really understand the essence of what it is I'm doing.
But I think all of us need that, whatever our role is all I'm saying. It doesn't help me discriminate into the space that we're saying, so therefore, here's some things we need to do.
Well, so for example, if we did a better job training PMs to understand that all projects are investments and that therefore they're investment managers, okay, and that when they're talking about risk management, they're talking about investment risk. And when we're talking about businesses taking risks, and, you know, like we pocket all of our profit and just cut a bigger dividend to all our shareholders, or we could take some of the money and take a risk and invest in something that might help us all thrive even more and genuinely elevate our world. Like, it's not just this sort of dreamy, vague unicorns and rainbows conversation here. It's like, that's the essence of what we're here to do. We need to do a better job just thinking clearly about like the core essence of what we're here to do.
I like the aspect of taking a risk to elevate the world. I know it doesn't make it as sexy of a tagline, but that for me is like that sort of, you could call it like bravery, which in my world is not always a good thing, right? Bravery could be really stupid, but you're taking a risk to try and do something that's going to make a difference in some way, shape, or form.
And oh, by the way, it was only, you know, a few hundred years ago, maybe, that taking any risk to do that would have been just completely stupid, right? The notion that we could have, you know, a growing pie for us all to get a bigger slice rather than I'm going to pillage your city, steal what you have so that I have more because I used to have less. And there's a thick pile. Like all of human history until very recently was about, I better get mine or else somebody's going to get theirs. Now we have a different game here where we can invest and actually have genuine reason to believe it might turn out better.
I guess what I was challenging here is not that the idea that we could see how we could walk up to that goal that you just referenced about making the world, elevating the world. I'm not challenging that. In fact, this is classic strategy, right? You have your top line thing and the different subordinate divisions or disciplines or careers have their version, how they attach to that, how we call alignment, right? So I want to know how that's any different than the accountant. The accountant also should be involved in elevating the world. So given that, I'm just saying, I think that I would expect a better refinement underneath that. In other words, in order to elevate the world, we as PMs or we who promote this discipline do the following things. Because to me, two things pop out. We heard, actually, Mike, you queued me up with a guest many years ago, and I love where you just went, Galen. He boiled it down to when you're actually a good PM, when you've kind of learned all the tools and techniques and you're embedded, what you really become is a risk manager All the rest is just methods of understanding there is a future. We are not there yet. I have some resources. We may be wrong. We may be right. I'm trying to get us there. And there's pitfalls along the way, right? And so it's this idea of ultimately value, right? But he said, ultimately, a real PM is actually a risk manager. And I took it as we're future seers, right? We're trying to predict a future and help people get to it is how I interpret it more poetically.
And take something real simple and basic that was ground into our brains for decades until very recently, just deliver on scope, on schedule, on cost. And if you fail to do that, you're a failure as a project manager. But nowhere in there does it say, like, you know, you could do all that and have an exceptional ROI, or you could miss it and have maybe even more ROI, or you do it perfect and get zero or negative ROI, right? It's just sort of divorcing, this sort of very strange, unnatural divorcing of the essence of what it's all about.
To me, that came to the second tool that I think we have, which is decision-making. I think we're risk managers and decision-makers, and we need it for the purpose of creating value such that we are elevating. You see what I'm saying? That's how I'm beginning to see this. I think that's where it sits. But yeah, you're right. We get trapped by processes. People love that, right? It's the ceremony. We forget why the ceremony existed.
So if you want to take it all the way back to the stud, I think one of the biggest, not problems, but sort of diversions that I see along the way is that projects are temporary by definition. Therefore, a project manager's role is seen as temporary by definition. And therefore, you can only measure them on how they delivered. You can't measure them on the impact after that, not easily, at least, right? I mean, or not traditionally. And now I think that's changing. And I think that's probably part of the, you know, there's still confusion around that. It's like, okay, how do I know if I delivered value as a project manager? I just said, here you go. Here's that thing you asked for. And then I go on to my next project. So how do I know if I got like major ROI? How do I know if that project that went $2 million over budget actually made $4 million more than they thought it would? I walk away thinking it's a failure. Somebody else along the way realizes it's a success and never tells me.
And right in there, you're talking about it after the fact, and we're doing like the postmortem to see whether we got good ROI. What if we could have taken action midstream to have driven it way higher? But if we're not even taught to ask the question, right? We go to the PM review, the status reviews, and we're asked about cost, schedule, and scope. We're not asked about, has the value proposition fundamentally shifted that might cause us to take dramatic, you know, change in course.
Yeah, you're calling them out as decision makers there, but and then that's the key function. But I would go back even farther, which is, was it thought of as an investment when it was originally planned or understood by the person who's delivering now, the PM? And that translation from the executive layer to the PM, if they're not trained that way, particularly, and I'm going to quote a friend of mine from 2020 who said, part of the problem is PMs are seen as a general resource to get projects done in an organized way. It's like hiring a hitman. Who is available right now to get this job done. So that was Galen way back in the day. So this is a problem, right? I think from what you just said, I actually supported the hitman notion in a certain context, but you just said something really interesting that gets to what Mike was going at, which is if they're brought in short term, how are we obligated to let them know what this investment really is and how can they make the decisions that could have been done midstream? Like you said, it's all after the fact. So this hitman attitude, this temporary attitude does make it hard, doesn't it?
I think like you said it earlier, when it came to techniques that, you know, perhaps we have forgotten about or separated, you know, erroneously. But sometimes you do need a fixer, a hitman, right? Sometimes you do have that project that, you know, isn't going the way you want it to, right? You're looking at it from a risk management standpoint, and you're saying, I need someone who can just really apply all of the sort of project management magic to get this through the gates now. And then they can walk away. Because for me, the decision I'm making is, if I just watch it go wrong, it'll go really wrong. If I bring in someone to fix it, then even if I haven't given them all the context, and even if they won't be around after the project sort of realizes its value, I still have, you know, managed that risk back towards success. And I think that's okay. I think there can be, you know, hit people, project manager. I don't know. Anyway, it's like, yeah, the gun for hire mentality. I don't think it's the wrong thing. A lot of EPMOs I know work that way, where they're like, yes, please step in, either because we know this project that hasn't started yet is a big deal and we need it to go right, or that project we started without you is going wrong and now we need you to fix it. Like, I think that's a valid use. But maybe what we're saying is that project management doesn't describe both, really. Or project manager, what a project manager does, doesn't describe both in terms of a temporary kind of get in there and fix it gun for hire, or a strategic person who, you know, understands and will be involved in some way, shape, or form in the realization of value from their project. and maybe a blend in between, right? I'm not saying that the Guns for Hire don't get that, but we end up describing two different things, perhaps.
Yeah, you made me think of a quote that a colleague says when he's trying to channel the typical executive perspective. It's, I don't care if it's a girl duck or a boy duck. I just want eggs.
So I'm back to the burr in the saddle to see what we're getting at here then. So the comment was, how do you fit in where people who can be non-project managers, certainly not titled, are somehow driving projects, leading projects? And we're talking about projects in the context of being good decision makers if they understood it in terms of being an investment. So Mike is hitting us with the investment side. You asked the question, how do they fit in? So what's our solution? What does a listener need to take away from this who's getting ready to take the test, has taken a test, has been doing a job as a PM, has been told they were a PM, was invited to realize that they could label themselves a PM, they didn't know? All these kinds of people we run across in this environment.
Let's broaden the lens. We started with this encroachment thing and we said, listen, are we under attack? And there's two responses, or at least in my notes. I said, yeah, we could like batten down the hatches and go to war, like fight, you know, and Mike, to your point, like play it like it wasn't post-industrial revolution side of things. And we're just like fighting for territory. And we can just say, no, my projects, and we can hog them. And we could try and trash everyone else's projects so that they don't go well, so that they have to call us and we have to fix it. That's one way to do it. Or the other conversation, which I think is happening, is that it's not encroachment, it's blending. Because we need people to understand project delivery in order for projects to go well. Everyone wins if projects go well, by the way. And the, well, I mean, everyone involved in the project, unless the project was to like take over some territory, then maybe not everyone wins. But I would say that the opposite also needs to happen, which is project managers need to be taught. You need to let your project manager in a little bit too, as much as they need to share project management techniques and their craft with business leaders and with project team. I think it becomes more of a conversation. And what's exciting to me, this is my optimistic take that I hope people will take away from this, is that yes, AI is here. Yes, it can do a lot of project management-y stuff, including risk identification. Actually, it's pretty good for that sort of thing. We have informal project managers. There's lots of projects getting delivered by people who have never thought of themselves as a project manager and probably have never been taught to manage a project, but they're just delivering stuff because that's part of their role. And then you've got project managers who have been delivering projects, always felt like they had to justify their own relevance, are a bit afraid now and don't understand where they fit in. But I think where they fit in is that somebody needs to drive that conversation, that education, and advocate for ways to deliver a project well so that we're not all just like stumbling over ourselves, trying to figure it out, building the plane as we fly it. There is a sort of responsibility, I think, now for project managers to be like project management ambassadors.
I love that. And, you know, it really is sort of a different kind of call to arms, right? It's a call to invest in yourself and up your game, right? If you've always hang your hat on, well, I'm the person that keeps the meetings organized, and I'm the person that checks in and makes sure the work's getting done, and I'm always diligent about sending meeting notes out afterwards. Well, most of those tasks don't really require a human anymore. If you refuse to up your game and elevate your value proposition in a way that project management is asking you to, has always asked you to, right? Your organization may not have. The PMBOK guides in the past may not have encouraged it. I don't know, right? But the point is, it's there now, clear as day, if you didn't see it before. And I think that's a phenomenal opportunity. In fact, somebody, a good friend of mine who's on the board of PMI, came and guest lectured one of my graduate level classes. And the question from one of the students was, do you think AI will take our jobs? And she said, yes and no. It will take away PM jobs of the PMs that refuse to embrace AI.
Yeah, and I think that was actually almost like a mic drop right there. That was the call to action, right? Is to become PM ambassador. So I want to take it to the AI conversation, that lurking elephant here. But right before we go there, I would suggest to our listeners, you two might be very good sources of that kind of resolution for them. Meaning, we just said they need to become project ambassadors. It's incumbent on them to learn and the executives to open the doors to them at some point. Where will they learn that?
I'll take a first stab here. Yes, I know this is not a practical solution, but really the training needs to change as well. And we're seeing that happen. I will do a shameless plug, which is that we built a course and we took a gamble because we were like, you know what? It's so easy to like read up on like project manager techniques, right? And I see people do it in our stats all the time. But we took a gamble on our course. We called it Mastering Digital Project Management. And yes, it's about digital, but we decided that it shouldn't really be about project management techniques. It should really center around instinct and judgment and leadership skills. And through that, we kind of try and really hammer home the ROI thing, because most of my audience is like, you know, they're in agencies. So profit margins do matter. That's how people get paid in your agency. And as long as you understand that and your role within these projects, then everything after that point actually starts to click a little bit differently. So, and I'm not the only one, I'm sure. There's many courses out there that are starting to apply at least that ROI lens and that risk management lens and prioritize it above, you know, is your, you know, do you know all the inputs and outputs and processes and what have you, like PMBOK 5 and 6 stuff, and above things like, you know, I don't know, like just like creating a project plan or, you know, estimating and things like that. It's all important stuff, but it, you know, it's quite commodified now. It's sort of known stuff, but the real game changer is going to be like finding training that is aligned to value delivery.
I love what you just said there, Galen. It's about becoming decision makers and actually learning something about your intuition and being able to use intuition to become that ambassador that you need to be. Mike, what are your thoughts on that?
I love the framing, Galen, of the class as you described it, because if you learn the techniques first and then the why, it's kind of backwards, right? If you learn the why and then you're like, you know, there should be a technique to help me assess whether spending another 100 grand to accelerate this thing by a month might actually be worth it. And I shouldn't just have to like stick my thumb in the air and guess. Okay, now I'm going to look up critical path analysis and acceleration premiums and delay cost and all these things, right? And whereas if I just taught those without any purposeful context, it just falls on deaf ears and people forget it and they don't understand why it's important anyway. So I think that's a great start. And I also do think, shameless plug for PMI and PMBOK 8, which will be out next spring probably once it's through all the review cycles and graphics and all that. I, of course, am investing my volunteer time along with 11 other talented folks who really want to help up the game for the whole community, especially for the junior folks that haven't had a chance to understand, you know, what is the essence of it? And like, I'm just trying to get a job, be promoted and be viewed as a valued team player.
Well, it's back to executives actually. Well, I will take it from my lens, which is about organizations. And I believe organizations are designed by managers and the framework for them is set by the executives. I separate the two. So it's going to be incumbent on executives to say this stuff matters around here. Because the question ultimately is what matters around here. And in this case, what is the enabler we need? And they're going to have to set the environment that allows this to happen or demands it happens or expects it to happen. And so we're back to the world will be better, I heard years ago, when PMs become the CEOs. I don't think that. I do believe it's when CEOs understand the discipline of delivery.
Yeah. And you know, Kendall, I think this was a quote from you, but I don't know if you got it from some other management guru before you, that the outcomes of any organization are driven directly by their design.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's, if you don't like the outcomes, then redesign it. You're getting what it was designed to give you.
I don't want to tiptoe around AI, but I don't want to ask quite the same question. We had here a concept of a question we were talking about before, which is how to use AI to how you can use AI, right? To supercharge your PMs or your PM discipline. And the other one, why the converse, which is why is replacing PMs with AI not a good plan? I believe a lot of us have struggled and are learning that we have to use AI and there's a lot of ways to do it. So I actually would like not to go over the litany of all the ways we can use AI because I don't know, it can do your Gantt charts, it can do a lot of stuff. And that's going to change by the time we publish. I like the second question in a way, which is why is it a bad idea to replace PMs? Question. What is it that we still provide to the discipline that is not supercharged by new tools and automation, even if they are deep thinking, as it were, automation? What is it that we need to be thinking about? Because that's what I think we have to lean into to help provide value.
No, I love that. And honestly, for me, I think it's maybe an obvious answer, but all the human interfacing for the time being is where we deliver value for now. But, you know, I mean, until I have to negotiate, I mean, maybe I do negotiate with ChatGPT every day, but until I need to negotiate scope with ChatGPT, then I still need a set of skills that can drive that conversation. And I still need the tools that give me the courage to enter that conversation. And I still need to understand why it's important that I get the outcome that I need from all of these tough conversations. And yeah, not just negotiating scope, but, you know, like finding a path forward when there's a conflict within your team, right? And there are sort of multiple options and we do need to weigh things. And sure, like, you know, some of the AI tools will have probably more data than we have at their fingertip, but there is this sort of still that bigger picture idea and, you know, doubling down on why it's important for us to at least be able to ask the right questions to get a better understanding of the bigger picture so that we can drive those human interactions in a way that leads our project towards its goal of delivering value. Probably too many words to describe the simple thing, which is just like human stuff. The human is the chaos, actually, and much of the risk.
When you got to chaos and risk, I think you started to answer it, because when you say the human stuff, I want to challenge that. I mean, I get where you're going, but I actually want to challenge that. The human stuff is always what's left over after some sort of technology comes in. So what was the human stuff in 1500 is not the human stuff anymore in the same way. I mean, it includes the human stuff we have now, but it included a lot of stuff that we don't have as human stuff anymore, right? So to say the human stuff is almost not helpful, because it means whatever we haven't solved with the technologies we have around us, but we know there's something hiding in there. But you just said it at the end, it is handling the chaos. To me, that was one of the fascinating things about being a PM. And I've tried to talk to groups of PMs about, which is, I think the role is that we help bring order to chaos. We could be wrong, but we try and bring order. Could be a bad bet, but we try and bring order because others need that order. This is back to the roots around discipline. You've mentioned courage a few times. That feels very much like a human trait, doesn't it? And having intuition, which we still think is a human trait. I don't know. Mike, what are you thinking?
I would lean in intuition and couple it with critical thinking. It certainly is possible that AI can develop intuition and critical thinking ability over time. I think we're a long way from that yet, even with the rapid pace that it's evolving. And just as one example, I gave a lecture on the topic of organizational change and the difficulty of getting all the humans aligned and, you know, and all the opinions on overcoming change resistance and all this sort of stuff. And I made the point that, you know, and I'm not the first to make this point for sure, that humans are not actually resistant to change. We're the most adaptable species on the planet. That doesn't mean we always choose to be, or that we choose to leverage the skills that come with that. But this notion that we will always face resistance because people are inherently resistant, and therefore we need a basket of techniques to overcome the resistance, I call that out as fundamentally flawed. And one of my students synopsized the course, as they're all required to do, or the class session, and posted something about the importance of overcoming change resistance. She had consulted AI to synopsize my class. And I'd made the exact opposite point, because I'm trying to encourage critical thinking. But if the large language model that the AI is based on doesn't have those conversations, or the, you know, 1% of the conversation that it's pulling from, it will give you a bunch of standard stuff that doesn't have a whole lot of critical thinking in it yet.
So I took this question and I asked AI how to answer that question in defiance of everything we're saying here. And it mentioned four top things here that I think you may find interesting: human judgment and empathy, which is related to complex decision-making and understanding, empathetic understanding. So that's interesting. May have something we've hit on already. Adaptability and creativity, which is driven by flexibility and concepts of innovation. Relationship building, just because they're not human, there's no one to build a relationship with. And then fourthly, ethical consideration, that ethical decision-making is not something that it's going to be helpful with. I don't know what all that means, but to the extent that human things are ethical things, I think automation has never addressed that. It's only exacerbated our ability to be unethical, right?
The classic example that's now becoming more and more real is autonomously driven cars, mm-hmm. right? Where if my only choice is to run myself off a cliff or knock over a woman with a baby stroller, what choice do I make? And how do I train AI to make that choice? That's like an impossible choice. And there's a lot of those. In traffic safety, of course, there's a lot of those. That particular one might be an extreme one because it's not always a cliff.
Well, let me tell you where I run across it that's less the big drama and the ethicist that pose those questions. You're in an organization. When you're a manager of some sort, it means that you have some ability for some agreement, for some covenant we've all made, some agreement of our culture, that I have some power over you in some way. Something I do has the ability to cause a change in your behavior or make you have feelings about what you think the behavior is going to be. You may not make the change, right? That's what a manager is doing, right? We have an ethical decision making every time we engage in a communication with someone who, based on our society, our culture, and our organization, we have the ability to, you know, let's say it really simple, to ruin their day or make them happy. And that can happen in every conversation we make, and it can't be hidden. I feel that this issue around ethics does matter to the extent that we are engaging with people. We are influencing people, specifically influencing people. To me, that's an onus that has to come back to values and ethics and an understanding of the environment you're in. But Galen, let me go back to you. How does this play out when you see your membership talking about AI? How are they feeling the parts that they're not? Is it like just account managers? Like, I'll do the sales. Sales will always be in my personal bailiwick, and that's how that's going to work. How are you experiencing this real conversation in real time?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I mean, here's the way I kind of see the conversation, because for years, project managers especially those working in an agency space, have come to me and said, I want to be more strategic. How can I be more strategic? And my usual answer was, first define a strategic, come back and talk to me. But, you know, here is a real opportunity now to take away some of those things using AI that are considered non-strategic, even though they probably are strategic. Anyways, more on that later. But, you know, like, okay, I spend so much time doing status reports and like looking through my risk register and, you know, emailing people. Like, I never have time to be strategic. And now, at the very least, the real reality that people are facing is that, okay, game on. How are you going to up your game now that this layer is taken care of? So yes, spend some time, learn the tools, right? To your point, you need to embrace AI in order to stay relevant in an AI world. And so do that. But then you also have to be thinking about the other thing that you do. And I think, so the biggest shift I see is the folks who, you know, Kendall, to your point, did think that their value was that they can be super organized with the meeting notes and the project plans and everything across many, many projects. And that's why they're valuable to the organization. They've got a little bit more work to do because those are the things that are kind of changing and getting disrupted like very quickly. Yeah, that I'm seeing sort of in that space. And then, you know, there is that other layer of like, okay, the folks who are like, I wanted to be more strategic. Now they need to really figure out what being more strategic is. The folks who do understand what being more strategic is needs to start opening those doors and getting an education that was fundamentally not part of the way that project managers have been educated, whether they became project managers on purpose or by accident. They never really got the training that will help them be more strategic in this post-AI, future AI, I don't even, but anyway.
I like something you just said there that you mentioned earlier, by the way, again, I wanted to jump on that because you said, look, the imposition of AI makes this all seem more dramatic and different, but actually it's just another tool on top of the underlying problem we've always had. If you're literally telling me my job is supposed to be the one who's designing the strategy and I can't believe I'm doing it, then I'm like, so why are you, like, it's a choice. And this tool has simply highlighted, we're taking away the struts. It was always a choice, I would say. It should be an easier choice now, although this may open the door more for more AI whisperers until they figure out how to make that easier for us. But you also said something else that's an implication in there is, you know, where did these leaders learn all this strategy? Because I don't really think there's honestly a lot of courses that are just how to be a strategist one day leadership thing. In fact, don't like people who do often because I've maintained that it's not about rising through the ranks to it. There's no course to take, I don't think, in the same way. So what you just said made me go to the next level of the leadership layer, which is, I would love to hear an executive actually explain what they think they know that they have to tell a PM. And not because they don't, but I'm curious, would someone write that down?
Again, it comes back to transparency and secret sauce and ethical dilemma, right? The trolley problems and things like that. We almost don't want to write it down. The fact that we have to program AI to make that decision, part of our resistance is that we had to write it down. However, I mean, I know that probably commercial and fighter pilots, like, it's in the manual. It's like, if you're going to crash, don't crash into the school. Right? It's written down somewhere, but we have a resistance to it. And I think likewise for, you know, leaders and executives where they're like, I can't tell them that. I can't tell them that, you know, if we don't hit this margin because my shareholders are putting pressure on me that I have to fire a bunch of people and I might not have a choice other than to do it en masse via Zoom. But they don't want to say these things because in some ways, not necessarily they're not proud of it, but maybe, right? It's like, it's just part of the job. My job is hard. It's hard to explain. But when you do explain it, I think it's insight, to be honest with you, whether or not it's damning. But I think that's the crosstalk problem that I have, you know, right now, where, you know, project managers don't want to listen to that because they're like, that's exec stuff. Don't even talk to me about that. My job is just to look at this project. You do all the hard decision stuff, okay? And then the exec team is going like, you do project stuff, okay? Like, I don't want to burden you with all this stuff that I have to do. When I worked at one of the big management consultancies, I sat on the floor next to a bunch of managing directors. I saw the conversations and I've been lucky enough in my career that I've gotten exposed to it, but I've also been smart enough to know that I need to keep my ears open and like pay attention to this because it matters. And I think that's the barrier to the crosstalk is that is like, not my problem, don't want to hear it. In this day and age is not good enough. If you want to level up your game, you need to be listening to everybody. You need to be understanding what's important to you in everything you hear. And yeah, in some ways seeking it out. It's not going to be as easy as buying a course.
Dylan, you just triggered a memory of something a mentor of mine once said. He said, you know, everyone talks about the importance of focus, and that's proper, right? Well, sometimes the best way to focus is to zoom out, not zoom in. And so what you just described was you realize the opportunity you had to zoom out, right? I got my day-to-day job where I'm zooming in, and I got to focus on my things and do my tasks and deliverables, whatever. But these guys are talking about something that is far more zoomed out. And I can tune it out as like above my pay grade or diluting my focus on my day-to-day tasks or whatever. But if you choose to zoom out and learn what that zoomed out picture looks like and what are the dilemmas and the challenges and the arguments and the debates and all that, and how do I meld my own view of that zoomed out picture, that's a great initial step. I think then we need a step two, which is too many organizations rely on this hierarchical model where there really is only one person that actually has the system view and is responsible for the system performance. And so if I've not even given my people like any at-bats on how to get good at helping the system improve, then I'm only training myself. And all the succession planning in the world, if I don't stick someone in there and says, all right, now it's real. These are tough questions and challenges. We have a very complex system. None of us actually understands all the facets about this system. It's too big and complex. But yeah, here we are. We're going to make a decision. Go. That's how leaders are grown, right? The zoom out and then the actual opportunity to learn.
I was thinking about how I would try and be practical about what you guys said. And listeners, this is what I learned from today, this idea about how is that barrier crossed, it really bringing the value across. I was trying to think how I would address this. I would tell all executives, or I would tell all project managers to challenge themselves on this. I view it as collaboration. And I don't mean that it's like some big fancy word. I very specifically was thinking of the people where this exposure of the information, like, you know, and if we don't sell anything, like mumble, mumble, I don't want to mention that Thanksgiving is going to suck, you know, like whatever, right? Because people aren't stupid. But the other thing is you don't want to show a lack of confidence of direction, right? We get trapped in that. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in there. My point is this, I have chosen as an individual based on my own value that I like to work with people as collaborators. Like I invite them into my brain as a collaborator. I like some other doors, but that's a door I have. It's like, I do seek collaborators. And when I can bring a subordinate, let's say as executive, the person charged with a PM base and say, collaborate with me. Let us think together. In this space, we are both thoughtful people doing something. And when I do that, that is probably how I'm beginning to share how I'm seeing the world, how I react to the world, how I emotively react to some of it, and also how I'm trying to be thoughtful about it. And they don't have to do it the same way, but they could just see that. But to everyone out there, that's how I found I can work around that.
And what I heard there, Kendall, was collaboration around solving a specific system level problem.
I'm sorry, you're absolutely right. It wasn't like, let's just collaborate. It was because we're working together. By the way, now you guys got the pitch, I'm going to pitch. That's how I handle the organizational coaching side, working with leaders to work with their managers, is I won't go in and do team building and collaboration because we don't have a good team and we're not collaborating. We need more team building. The other one that I get in my world is we don't have enough trust around here. We need a trust building exercise. So we're going to all trust each other on Friday at the end of the workshop. We'll have trust on Friday at 4:00. Unless I get a little behind, it may be 4:10, right? So what I found is, to this point, doing work is what produces this trust building. What I heard here today that I'm taking away, doing this kind of work together on a specific problem, the way you stated it, Mike, around a complex system, is how we build the information exchange, the learning and growing.
And maybe even invite AI to the problem solving session.
Well, we want new ideas, but those are just the ideas we get to play with, right? Well, listen, guys, thank you very much for your time today. Galen, what's up next for you in the world? You got some conferences coming up or some webinars anybody needs to know about?
I'm speaking at the Bureau of Digital's PM Summit in Austin in October. I'm excited about it because it's, you know, another rare opportunity for me to get out of the house. I work too much right here where you see me or where you hear me. So that'll be fun, again, to talk about some of the topics that we're talking about today. And, you know, if you're into or intrigued by this notion of what I've been talking about in digital project management and that space, we've been trying to do a lot more of just like online events. And we're trying to do something a little bit different and get to the root of things because there's just so many webinars out there that are like high level. We're trying to do more hands-on with AI tools. We're trying to do more tough discussions with people who are thinking about some of these challenges, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And my plug there is that's another great way. If you're not going into the office and sitting next to a bunch of, you know, executives or managing directors every day and can't overhear these conversations, guess what? Great way to do it is to listen to podcasts that aren't meant for you, right? That are maybe meant for executives, get that perspective, that POV. And also like come hang out at some of these events where, you know, you can hear someone who trying to tackle this problem, trying to find collaborators to solve a problem and just listen. Check us out at thedigitalprojectmanager.com We've got a members-based community as well with some extras, but fundamentally, it's this conversation. We just want to get that crosstalk going with project professionals, whether you call yourself a project manager or an executive or someone on the project team, or none of those things. We're just trying to sort of spread the word, get on the same page.
And highlighting that was the digital project manager. You got to remember the right?
Thank you. Yes. And I rushed by that. I was like, oh, normally I should slow down there. Yes. TheDigitalProjectManager.com.
Mike, where are you headed? Are you speaking anywhere? You just told me you were on a panel producing the next PMBOK.
Yeah, that's crowded out some of my extracurriculars, but I still do a couple webinars a month and might post some stuff on LinkedIn here or there. So maybe just follow me on LinkedIn to see if there's anything interesting I'm up to.
Excellent. Well, and I ask everyone else, if you have any new topics or guests, bring it on. And if you have any challenges to any of this, let me know. We are always ready to fire up another podcast episode when we need to. So with that, I will say goodbye.
Well, you may not be a fact PPM, a government project manager, but for those of you who are PMPs and who have listened through this whole episode, you can continue your certification by collecting a PDU at PMI's PDU Reporting Center and select online or digital media and manually enter provider code number 4634 and select Empowered Strategies. And then the full name of the episode, PMPOV 0117, EM Discipline Integration in the Federal Government, and select Ways of Working in the Talent Triangle. I am your host, Kendall Lott, hoping to see you at the 2024 UMD Symposium. But whether we meet or not, until next time, keep it in scope and get it done.
This has been a Final Milestone production, sponsored by Empowered Strategies.